What are your memories of the Vietnam War? Did it loom large in your life? Did you serve? Did loved ones serve? Do you think the country has healed from the sacrifice and defeat? Do you think there are lessons from the Vietnam War that can be applied today? Good morning, I'm Joy Cardeen. You're listening to the Ideas Network. We are going to discuss the Vietnam War in light of the start of the much-anticipated series on PBS, the latest Ken Burns and Lynn Novick's 10-episode documentary, The Vietnam War, debuted on Sunday, and it will continue through September 28th. The Washington Post says it is required viewing all 18 hours of it. So, are you? Are you watching it? Is there a reason why you're not? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardeen Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardeen Show. Our guest is Sarah Botstein. She's an award-winning film producer. Her latest project is The Vietnam War, the new PBS documentary by Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. As mentioned, it is 18 hours long, and it took a decade to complete. The first part debuted on Sunday night. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for being with us. Wow, 10 years to produce. Why did it take that long?
Well, I think Ken and Lynn and I, our writer Jeff Ward and I, have been talking about the fact that it was about 10 years ago when we were completing a film about the Second World War that we decided to tackle this subject, and then we had to make that practically happen and raise some money and get ourselves organized. And we started shooting and researching and really diving in about 7 years ago. But to make a film on this scale actually takes a remarkably long time. So, you know, many of our big series have taken close to this amount of time. It's 10 episodes, 18 hours. We gathered material from literally all over the world and spent a good deal of time in Vietnam and doing very deep, extensive research in this country and finding people to interview and putting the whole show together.
Yeah. I wondered if there was, though, some thought as to whether we were ready for it before now.
Well, I think that's absolutely fundamentally true, and Ken talks a lot about that when he discusses his work and the topics that we have tackled that go up to the present moment, that we tend to need some distance and perspective and time to look at a subject and to think about it from a historical perspective. And there's certainly in the last 10 years been a fair amount of new scholarship, declassified information, presidential audio transcripts. There's a lot of new information that we took advantage of, those scholars and those books and that stuff. So that's actually was a terrific part of the project.
Yeah. So give us the cliff notes on how you go about producing such a 10-part, 18-hour-long series.
Yeah, well, I love to say that I take a really deep breath and I gulp really hard, and we worry a lot. I don't think most of us have slept a lot in the last 7 or 8 years, but, you know, our process remains somewhat similar. Subjects, you know, require us to change some of how we work and what we do and where we do it, but, you know, we organize material. We have a schedule. We find people to interview. We, you know, I oversee an incredible team of co-producers, associate producers, researchers, editors, and they're extraordinarily talented group of people, and we all try to row our boat in the same direction for a long time.
Yeah. So how do you decide whose stories to tell?
That we all love to say that's sort of the best part of our job. That is the first, after we read a lot and try to learn about the subject in a serious way and decide who our scholarly advisors It's usually a group of academics and writers and thinkers and people who have really immersed themselves in the subject for most of their professional lives. So we do our own research, we build a team of scholarly advisors, and then we really set out for 2 to 3 years to just meet people, in this case around the country and in the country of Vietnam, whose stories we think would shed some new light on this subject and are important and essential to understanding our experience in Vietnam. So we, Marines, Army, nurses, anti-war protesters, people who went to Canada, we wanted to really show a range of experiences during this time and spent a good deal of 2 to 3 years meeting people and talking to them. So for the 80 people you see on screen over the 10 nights, we spoke to, you know, 10 or 15 people for every person that's on screen. So, and ended up interviewing about 100 people, and nearly 80 of them are in the final film.
Wow. So, well, this is hard, but what didn't make it into the series?
Oh, Ken loves to say that nothing bad doesn't make it in. Some of our best material ends up on the cutting room floor, and it's just sometimes too many things, and you know, occasionally we do other, you know, we use stuff that doesn't make it into the final film to talk about a subject. So there are scenes that, you know, will be out in the world that aren't in the final film, but that we're using for education and outreach and community engagement. But, yeah, sometimes just a story is too much or doesn't fit or feels redundant to another story and doesn't make it in the final film.
Yeah. Whose story is the Vietnam War?
How do you mean?
Well, I guess you did. You said you interviewed everybody from, I guess, all aspects. This is this being done for the veteran? Is this being done just for all of us sitting at home understanding what happened?
It's being done for all of us sitting at home to try to understand what happened, for sure. I think we're interested in making a film that, whether you're young or old, whether you have a direct connection to the Vietnam War or not, to understand where we are today and what our country is like and the politics that surround us and the legacy of the Vietnam War, you have to understand what happened then and that you can't make the mistake that Americans often make by just focusing on the American experience of the war, and you have to understand both who our ally was during that time and who our enemy was. And that is an essential component to what we were trying to do and what inspired us and brought us to Vietnam, and we hope makes the film successful.
Yeah. In fact, we did pull a clip. This is a Vietnamese woman. Mm-hmm. Who recounts when the United States moved into Vietnam to mm-hmm. support the South.
Mm-hmm.
North Vietnam and the Viet Cong violently clashed with South Vietnam, and here is this clip.
My father was very happy. We're such a small and poor country, and the Americans have decided to come in to save us. Not only with their money, their resources, but even with their own lives. We were very grateful. We thought, with this power, the Americans are going to win.
So can you tell us her story?
So that's Zhuang Van Mai Elliott, often called Mai Elliott. She's an extraordinary Vietnamese woman who's married to an American. She lives in California. She wrote a truly beautiful book called The Sacred Willow about her family's experience. She worked for the Rand Corporation. I won't ruin too much because you should get to know her during the film. And she's an advisor to the project along with her husband, David Elliott, and she's an extraordinarily thoughtful, beautiful, elegant, wise, articulate woman who's a central character in the film.
We have a news break coming up in just a moment, so let me remind listeners that we are talking about the 10-part documentary series on PBS, The Vietnam War, which started on Sunday, and it continues through September 28th. Are you watching? What do you hope to learn? What would you like to share in terms of your experiences with the Vietnam War? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Paula on Facebook says she has been watching. It was phenomenal, she writes. I loved how the documentary moved through history, weaving the threads of Vietnam's story to show how actions from the 1850s through the decades impacted through the 1960s. Masterfully handled. Riveting. So what do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. We are talking about the Vietnam War documentary that is currently airing on PBS, a 10-part series, 18 hours. We are talking with the producer of the Vietnam War, Sarah Botstein. And we are welcoming your questions for her. We're welcoming your memories of that era. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. The Washington Post is among those who are saying it is required viewing, and we're wondering if you are viewing it or not, and what have been your impressions so far. Jerry on Facebook says, I've been watching and I like it. I have been trying to convince my brother, a Vietnam vet from 71 to 72, to watch, but no luck so far. I was looking to see if it was available to watch online, hoping that that might make it easier for my brother to watch it, but I could not find it. He wonders if it's going to be available to watch online, and I guess we can check. I'm not positive. Sarah, do you happen to know?
Yeah, it's streaming for free on public television. It should be pretty easy to find if you go to pbs.org/the Vietnam War. Even if you just go to pbs.org, the first five episodes are actually up and streaming now, and the second five will be up and streaming starting next Sunday.
Oh, good.
It's out there for the public to view for free, like everything great about public media.
Yeah. What are your thoughts of Jerry's brother, who, as a Vietnam vet, is reluctant to watch?
Well, I hope that he will watch and see that we're trying to tell the story of what happened to people like him and his fellow soldiers, and also to the politics and the, general time period, and that we approach the subject with an open mind and try to just tell the story of what happened to individuals from around the country and in Vietnam.
Yeah, I was moved when I saw on Sunday night a Marine. I don't remember his name offhand, but his first clip was just so moving, because he said, speaking of the Viet Cong, that I hated them. I hated them, he said, but I was terrified of them. I was frightened of them. They scared me so much. Mm-hmm. And the more they frightened me, the more I hated them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the people that we interviewed showed us tremendous courage, bravery, thoughtfulness, generosity, and tried to be as honest and direct and open as they could be to try to understand why this is such a deeply painful, complicated, hard chapter in our country's own history. And that's a wonderful, very special man named John Musgrave, who lives in the middle of the country, who we met early on in the project and is a main character in our series, and he says that very articulately, and we have that clip in the first show, as you say.
1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. David in Raymond joins us. Hi, David.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I have chosen so far not to see it because of fear for two reasons that was engendered in me as a teenager. At some point, I will watch it. The main reason was, as a little kid and a teenager, we would watch the evening news every night. And we would watch CBS, which was Walter Cronkite. And he would lead off every single half-hour news show with the casualty count. Death toll, I don't know if he did MIA, but, wounded. And that was very impressionable on me as a teenager. Very negative, and it started to create a lot of fear year after year. And then when I was a senior in high school and military recruiters came in, all the boys were gathered into the auditorium, and basically the fear of imprisonment was instilled in us if we didn't register for the draft by our 18th birthday. Well, that just escalated my fear, and I wanted to do my duty, right? So, and I didn't want to go to jail. I didn't particularly want to go to Canada either. And so 3 weeks before my birthday, I went down to the recruiting station or the registration place in Columbus, Ohio. Couldn't find it. It was Saturday. I'm thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to jail. This is true. I went down and I called the next Monday. Yeah, they're at this address, that address. Went down next Saturday. I honestly couldn't find them. Happened a third time. And now I'm thinking, oh, boy, I'm thinking what those recruiters, registration people said, register by your 18th birthday, you're going to jail. So my birthday came. I was just, honestly, I was terrified. And a day or two later, it hit the news, mandatory registration no longer required.
Oh, boy.
So I breathed a big sigh of relief, but that fear never left. It never left.
Yeah, that fear was real, wasn't it, Sarah?
Yes, I think that's, very probably true experience for many young people. I would just say, we hope that people will watch to try to understand a little bit more what really happened then, and you didn't have to go. So that's a positive outcome of that story, but why people were so afraid and what was so painful and divisive and hard about this time in our country.
Yeah. Well, I'll share from my family. My brothers were terrified. They were afraid. Two were in college though, and did have that deferment mm-hmm. at first.
Mm-hmm.
And another did not go to college and decided to join the Navy, feeling mm-hmm. he'd rather join, enlist
sure.
into a branch of his choice rather than get drafted
sure.
into, he did not go to, Vietnam, though it was during the Vietnam War. He did go to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to go into too much detail there, but he did go to Canada. My husband on the other hand, also did join because he was not going to college, and he joined the Air Force, and he was mm-hmm. stationed in Okinawa and did not see combat in Vietnam, but still served during that era. But I just remember the fear that was going through our household at the time, that college deferment ended up being kind of a divisive thing in the country too, because then it turned out that poor people that couldn't afford college ended up getting drafted.
Yes, and we do talk about that in the film, and the draft laws and the lottery and how that evolved and changed over the course of the conflict, and how different presidents and politicians handled that. That's definitely a central part of the story. We also follow an extraordinary story of someone who ultimately went to Canada. So we do try to shed light on many different types of experiences and allow people to learn from all different types of people and to listen to each other. We often say that, you know, in a film you can have a dinner party with all sorts of people that probably wouldn't like to have dinner with each other, but in a film you can put them all at the same table and everybody can learn from each other.
Yeah. Let's go to Ed in West Allis. Hi, Ed.
There are only two people that should be the central characters of this documentary, and that's Wayne Lyman Morse and Senator Ernest Gruening, who had the courage to stand up to the war machine in August of 1964, mm-hmm. Wayne Lyman Morse being a great son of the state of Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and how we have failed miserably, both before Vietnam and after Vietnam, to listen to the peace activists, be they Eugene Victor Debs, Jeanette Rankin, Dorothy Day, the people that are in the streets constantly on the weekends trying to stop this insanity in Iran and Afghanistan, and the warmongering that McMaster is doing today, rattling this nuclear threat in our face, and we don't stop it.
Thank you, Ed. Because I want to focus on the documentary, but I do want to talk about, is there a hope that there will be lessons learned from this documentary, Sarah, in terms of not repeating history?
Yeah, you'll have to watch the 10th episode to see how we handle that question. I think, you know, Ken, Lynn, and I have been saying that the film raises lots of questions, and we don't necessarily answer those questions. We want the country to think about them and to consider what lessons we could learn, we have learned, we haven't learned, and to try and have a different conversation, as we have been saying.
Yeah. The documentary does cover, maybe you can talk some about what has been called the war at home.
Mm-hmm. So I think you can't do a deep dive into the Vietnam War without understanding what happened here with the people who understood from the very beginning that they felt the war was wrong and understood, or not understood, but felt that the war was wrong early on, and that was certainly part of what makes this history very interesting. And then as the war went on, and as you were saying, draft laws, lottery laws, things about the military experience changed, but also the politics changed, and our feelings about the war in general changed, the anti-war movement really, really grew. And the film, some of the questions that we raise, or we hope the film raises, are what does it mean to be a patriot? What does it mean to live in a democracy? If you don't believe in your government, do you have an obligation as a citizen to question that government? And certainly by 1970, we had a very active, very diverse anti-war movement in this country, and they were extremely effective in expressing and explaining what they thought was wrong about the war. And that movement fractured and became politicized and is complicated, and we follow the evolution of it and its effectiveness in almost every episode.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly was active here at the University of Wisconsin.
Of course, a very important place. Yeah, same with the University of Michigan and many college campuses around the country.
Yeah. I remember also one of my older brothers or sisters got a hold of a Stop the War sticker, and I put it on my desk at Richmond School. I was in sixth grade, and I put it on my name tag, and I'm sure that my teachers were like, what in the world? And I remember a music teacher who came in where did I get that sticker? She wanted to have one herself. So
I mean, I think, you know, children wore bracelets with POWs information. I think
the citizens
of this country were, everybody was involved in the war in some way. And that we didn't have a military class that was separate and apart because there was a draft. We had a citizenry that was very engaged in the politics and questioning what we were doing there. Again, it's, you know, one of our interviewees says that you know, Vietnam War drove a stake right through the heart of this country, and we haven't quite recovered, and I think that's actually true.
Yeah. And I meant to follow up on our first caller who said that he remembered watching Walter Cronkite on TV, because I do remember that, and there was a casualty count, and I remember after that learning about how this was the first war that was brought into our living rooms on our television sets.
Sure. Walter Cronkite is a character in the series, and you will see how the reporters, him and others, would show the casualty count at the beginning of the nightly news, and we do talk about and examine how the kind of free access that reporters had covering the war, and why that made what Americans saw different and unusual, and that we don't do that anymore, which was a lesson that the military took from the Vietnam War for sure. And I think an important part of how Americans, as the gentleman was saying, understood the war day in and day out.
And someone said that when we knew that the war effort was lost, when we lost Walter Cronkite, because it was believed that he made some sort of an anti-war statement on the air.
Right. People often say that was after the Tet Offensive in 1968. Walter Cronkite was there, and he gave one of his editorial statements. I won't ruin it. It's in the film.
Yep.
I think that's often taken out of context or misunderstood, and we do have that moment in the series and look forward to people learning about that when they get to episode 6.
And I'm recording the series because my husband, as I mentioned, who served in the Vietnam era in the Air Force, is on a trip right now and is unable to watch. So I think we're gonna do the binge watching together.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Carrie on Facebook says, a history lesson delivered by Ken Burns is always a learning experience that stays in one's mind long after an episode has aired. I lived my early years with this war, always hovering around on the TV and the radio, in the music, in the styles and conversations. And yet the true history and my understanding of it wasn't ever clear until many years had passed. So far, this series has shed light on the past and my memories, so many facets to this time for so many people and their lives. I think that that's true, that it was a part of our lives, yet we may not have understood the whole history and how we got involved and how things were went down because we, you know, it's as you mentioned, there's a lot of new things that are coming out just recently.
Mm-hmm. Right. I think that's the distance from the time that we have now. That's the benefit we have of young, energetic scholars. That's the benefit we have from hearing from the Vietnamese and the White House tapes and the presidential records. And that's what makes us get up in the morning, is to try to make a film that does just that.
Our guest is Sarah Botstein. She is an award-winning film producer, and she is the producer of The Vietnam War, the new documentary from Ken Burns and Lynn Novick. It's 18 hours long. It took a decade to complete, and it has just started on PBS. Part one debuted on Sunday night. The 10-episode series will run through September 28th. So, are you watching? Why or why not? What questions do you have for our guest? What memories do you have from that era? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We'll check news from NPR and Wisconsin Public Radio, and then we'll be back. This is the Ideas Network.
Somewhere around 80% of our casualties came from landmines of all sorts. In Vietnam, for me, just to get up in the morning and look out at the land and think, in a few minutes I'll be walking out there, and will my corpse be there or there? Will I lose a leg out there? would sometimes look at my legs as I walked, thinking, how am I doing this?
That's a clip from the Vietnam War, the 18-hour documentary series that is airing on PBS. Our guest produced the documentary, and we are talking with her about interviewing people who had lived through Vietnam or had some role in during the Vietnam War era. And we are welcoming your thoughts and questions and your own experiences. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Sarah Botstein is our guest, and our next caller who's been waiting is Tom in Burlington. Hi, Tom.
Congratulations on your great effort getting this thing done. It's quite an achievement. What amazed me was Ken Burns did the Civil War, and Mark Twain thought that this infatuation with Sir Walter Scott's chivalry thing and his books led to the Civil War and perpetuated slavery and that institution. And I'm just wondering, as you look at the Vietnam War, the different kind of media things and what really kind of influenced us in that way. Anyway, the other point is we got into this thing with the Maddox. Something, they fired some flares or something over the bow of the Maddox in Bay of Tonkin, and we went to war, and it was so long. And I was a page boy at the time in 59, and my father was on the member of the Defense Committee, and they appropriated the money for wars. But my father had died in 59, so I always wonder what kind of change it might have been. But I knew those people. I knew Kennedys and the Johnsons. We'd go up to New York with the Johnson family, so, President Johnson. But
Tom, what's your question or main point?
The earlier caller had said, but first of all, I can't watch because it's too painful for me. But why is it too painful to you? Just to go through the whole thing. We had Tim Kennedy here in Burlington died. Dick Nickerson from Racine, he was killed, and they went to these beaches and they come out of these holes and they shot him in the back. And
I'm very sorry, Tom, and you gave us a lot to talk about, but that is the part that I there's a lot of sacrifice, Sarah, and mm-hmm. a lot of us lost loved ones.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's, if you go to the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, which is one of the most important, I think, memorials probably in the world and certainly in our country, it's very important to understand that behind every name on the wall is a family and a story, and we want to humanize a time in our history that is so complicated, so we really do urge people to watch, to learn from our shared experience.
58,000-plus
mm-hmm.
died.
Yeah, and nearly, millions of Vietnamese,
yeah.
So it's very important to remember that.
That's right. It wasn't just Americans. Boy, we have full lines. Let me go to and Tom. Thank you for calling, and I'm sorry that it's so painful for you. Kenneth in Wheeler is with us. Hi, Kenneth.
Hi there. I just wanted to say, I'll try to make this brief, and that is that my brother and I were poor kids growing up in Chicago, and we were paying our way to junior college, and our deferment got lifted, and we knew we were going to be drafted, so. We felt like our only option was to enlist, even though we didn't really believe in the war. And anyway, we enlisted in the war. We served our time in there. I was against the war before I went. When we came back, we were very much against the war, and we became part of the anti-war movement. And I just wanted to say that people sometimes like to portray that the Vietnam War protesters hated the Vietnam soldiers. It never was true. We hated the war, but we didn't hate the soldiers. Mm-hmm. And we didn't spit on the soldiers when they came home. And I just want to say that that's a false division that people like to promote.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your comments. I hope that you will watch, and we do talk about and examine and meet some of soldiers like yourselves who came home and protested the war and represent your point of view. So thank you for saying that.
Yeah, thank you very much, Kenneth. Liz on Facebook says, at age 28, I worked alongside many who had served and now work at a job service in Montana. Mm-hmm. They were so fragile. We didn't know the term PTSD. Mm-hmm. They'd come unraveled at parties while drinking, and I would remember all the CBS News footage. It lives with me all the time, mm-hmm. and I'd like to find at least a couple of my former coworkers who suffered so much along with the whole country mm-hmm. and how it has entered our psyches so deeply. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was the other thing, is that some vets who came home... did have PTSD or all sorts of health problems from Agent Orange, and nobody really knew what was going on.
Yeah, so that's a legacy of war that goes back to the ancient Greeks, right? That soldiers come home from war, they don't know. I mean, I don't want to speak for everybody, but it is an experience of coming home from combat that you feel alienated, that no one will understand, it can't possibly understand, and that our understanding as citizens and family members and people who haven't served has evolved over time, and we've called it different things, and we do discuss that in the series, and I think it's an important legacy of the Vietnam War for sure.
Yeah, Chris on Facebook says, I was a senior in high school when Nixon announced the end of the war. Mm-hmm. Over the years, I dated a couple of Vietnam vets, and I lived in a house with a highly decorated POW MIA flag. Mm-hmm. The PTSD that these soldiers brought home was frequently worked out on their families. Mm-hmm. The problem with war is getting past it, even if it's not fought on your soil, mm-hmm. and that it is never really gone.
Right, and so we would, you know, I think to the point isn't even to move past it, but to understand it and to have a shared conversation, which is what we hope the film will do.
Yeah. Ray in Brownsville is with us. Hello, Ray.
Hi. I had a couple questions for the producer. First, what happened to DM's sister-in-law?
Whose sister-in-law?
DM or DM?
You're very hard to hear for some reason.
Can you spell it, Ray? I'm sorry, I'm DM, did you say?
DM, D-I-D-M.
Oh, yes. Did you watch last night? Is that why you're asking?
Yep.
Okay. His sister or his wife? Who are you thinking of?
Gwen DM's sister-in-law, I believe, right?
The wife? Who was in the film? That's his wife. The brother's wife. Yes.
Yep. And what happened to her? And then my second question is: will you touch upon, like, how after the war, decades after the war, we kind of had a revisionist sort of movement, especially in the media, with films like Rambo or the Deer Hunter, or TV shows like Tour of Duty. And I can take my answers off here.
Yeah, sorry, Ray. So I'll repeat the
second question.
Okay, thank
you. It's
question,
very hard
but,
to hear. Sorry.
But he won't, so what happened to DM's sister-in-law?
Mm-hmm. So she was a character in last night's episode. She actually died fairly recently. I think she lived in Paris for a long time. We don't... she's not a major character in the rest of the film. And then I actually couldn't hear what the second piece of what he wanted to know was.
Just for listeners, and I know you're not, you don't want to give away everything in every episode,
sure.
But what was the significance of the sister-in-law?
Well, she was quite outspoken and said some very incendiary things about the conflict in South Vietnam in 1963.
I see.
Yeah.
Well, I guess he was thinking that there was a revisionist movement going on with movies like Rambo and The Deer Hunter.
Right. Yeah. So the sort of Hollywood, those are two different things. One is the Hollywood representation of the war, which is definitely part of the war's legacy here in the United States, and how many people understand or think they understand the Vietnam War from those Hollywood movies. And that's a whole separate conversation. It's extremely interesting, and you guys could do an hour on that for sure. And then there is, could we have won in Vietnam? Were we winning? There are different schools of thought about that, and we do represent different points of view in the film.
I know that we have to let you go. What do you hope viewers take away from the series?
that it's important for us to listen to each other and to think about other people's experiences and to try to, you know, if you ever were to try to grow from such a painful chapter in our country's history rather than to let it fester and be more negative as we go forward.
Well, I want to thank you very much for all your work, and thank you for your time today.
Thank you so much for having me. Have a good day.
You too. Sarah Botstein, award-winning film producer and the producer of the PBS series The Vietnam War. We have a minute here or two to take another call or comment, letting Sarah go a little bit early so she can get to another commitment. Lincoln in Madison is with us. Hi, Lincoln.
Hi, yeah. The Vietnam War, you know what I mean? That memory, it's still in our Hmong community, you know? It's a tragic event that happened. You know, when the secret.
Oh, I'm sorry, Lincoln. Your call just dropped. And Lincoln, I'm sorry that we didn't get to your call earlier. Someone from the Hmong community, certainly Laotians, played a very important role in the Vietnam War, and now many in the Hmong community are here in Wisconsin for being an ally of the United States. Thank you, Lincoln, for calling. And thank you for all of your comments. We will probably follow up on this another day, because it's an 18-hour film, and it just got started. So thanks very much to our producers, Keely Bultina and Nyasia Ellison. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.